Whatever you might be going through and wherever you might be, this is Omar Serrato with the Tilted Lawyer Podcast. I'm here to take your mind off of things. Yes, I'm an attorney. No, I'm not giving you legal advice. We're going to sit and talk like people, as these are the candid thoughts of one practicing attorney, and it's after hours. So have a seat. Feel free to have a drink and join me. Let's get started. Good evening, everybody. This is Omar Serrano with the Tilted Lawyer Podcast. You know, I'm fighting some laryngitis and my voice is getting a little bit better, but it ain't that bad. Look, folks, it's part four of my breakdown of this Justin Baldoni timeline that was filed last Friday, about 7 days ago. And by the time I'm done with this, I think what we're going to have is the most comprehensive breakdown, legal breakdown of this evidence that's out there on the internet. Very well might be. I've seen other people try to tackle this document. I've seen other people talk about it in bits and bytes. But in totality, what I've done over the course of three videos now is talk about this case for like 10 hours. I'm going to spend another hour or so talking about it tonight. I might be joined by some reinforcements a little bit later. My goal is to go over the last 50 pages or so of this document so that we can have a full legal breakdown of the actual evidence that's been presented. What's missing? Where are the holes? And I think that what we have so far is, what we have so far is an idea of what both sides are going for. I think that I have so far been able to eschew all of the more salacious claims. What this really boils down to is it's a breach of contract case. We're going to talk about this smear campaign, the defamation aspect of it all, I think, today. But in terms of breach of contract and other things, there is evidence on both sides. And honestly, I can see both sides having a valid argument. I don't know where it's ultimately going to land with all of that. But I wanted to address some of your comments. Now, listen, yesterday I brought in a guest and she was an attorney. She's not familiar with this case. She's not a podcaster, really. She was my partner. She's been my friend for many years now. And I think a lot of you are upset because she was not following this case as closely as many of you. I didn't bring her in here for an encyclopedia recitation of the facts of the characters and the players that are in this case. I was there to bounce ideas off. She was there for me to bounce ideas off of her regarding her legal opinions, which is all I was concerned about with this case. But a lot of the comments were like, hey, she doesn't know anything about the... I didn't really know much about the underlying facts other than what I've read. I don't know much about this movie that's been well documented and things that I've said. But I did want to address some of what you guys were saying. I think a lot of you are confused. When you listen to my channel, I'm not Perez Hilton. I'm not TMZ. I'm not here for the celebrity gossip. I am a lawyer. I'm a practicing lawyer. And I take my job very serious. And when people file complaints, I break them down. And so when I endeavored to cover this case, my goal was to take these pleadings as if they had landed on my desk. And I was asked to break them down and give my legal opinions about strengths and weaknesses of the case, which is what I've done. And in the course of that, I've seen many of you, you're making your arguments, and it's fine. You're making your arguments. There was one that I wanted to, I'm like, no, I can't find it now. Of course, it's not going to be up right now. Oh, yeah, there's one comment that I got that I wanted. I had it up, and now I don't. Oh, maybe it was on a different... I think some, not all of you, probably like 95% of you don't share this opinion, but I think some of you that are unfamiliar with my channel, they're following this or clicked on this video because you saw that we're covering the Baldoni versus Lively lawsuits. We're expecting a more emotional coverage of this case. And that's just not what I do. Not what I do. There was one comment that said that I just don't understand. You just don't understand. Blake Lively is a manipulator. She manipulated Justin Baldoni out of that movie and this and that. It's like, yes, I understand that a lot of you are thinking that. I've even said it on this show. But what that also represents is an emotional argument that is meritless in a legal context unless you're able to frame it properly the way that I've been attempting to do over the course of the last 10 hours or so. And so when you watch this video, and at the end of this, I'm going to have four videos covering this case with a comprehensive legal analysis of every piece of evidence, every allegation contained in Baldoni's timeline that he's filed. And what I think about strength and weakness, I could tell you that I was of the opinion initially that Lively might have something to go off of here. As I got further into it, I thought that Lively was dead in the water. And as I've examined the evidence, I'm starting to see that really what this is likely to come down to is a lawsuit surrounding breach of contract and ultimately defamation and slander. I'm not buying into the sexual harassment claims. I haven't seen that evidence yet. There was one person that wanted to kind of push back on what I was saying. They wanted to play devil's advocate, and I was going to address that one. So this one person says, devil's advocate here, what if Blake actually felt these things regarding sexual harassment? Because that's her lens of the way she sees the world. Maybe she's been brutally treated or actually SA in the past, and she's uber sensitive and hyper aware of it occurring when the rest of us who have not experienced that thing is blown out of proportion. Just a thought. Well, the simple answer to that is if it would offend a reasonable person, and if her life experience has thrown her so far out of the spectrum of reasonableness, then if somebody were to recommend a health advocate that doubles as a weight loss expert for her to take that as a ruse to fat shame her, that's probably not a reasonable argument. And we're not going to hold people accountable to that and start awarding $400 million judgments as a result, is the difference. Nothing against her world lens, but if it's not reasonable, then you can't litigate and expect to get a money judgment. So those are the rules that we're dealing with. We're simply taking a legal analysis to this case, a legal magnifying glass to these allegations. I'm trying not to get too excited because I'm trying to rest my voice a little bit. Denny says that I was glad to hear Ileana's point of view as someone not deep in the case or the players involved. Yeah, that's why I brought her in, because she's not, she has no dog in this fight, man. She is a practicing attorney. She's not a podcaster. She doesn't spend time putting out content like that. She was my partner for a while. We're still friends. We still practice together. But she was there mostly to bounce legal ideas off of. I thought she did great. I understand why a lot of you guys were upset with it. Bruce says, if she has a background like that, making this kind of movie might not be the right decision. Exactly. You still got to be able to navigate in the world. And if you have that level of trauma that your lens has been so distorted, such as to not become reasonable to interact with the rest of the world without some fear of some traumatic offense occurring to you in your daily walk, and then perhaps you need to fix that and work on yourself, because the world is a big, scary place. And not everybody's going to be aware of your lens. What we are held to account is what's reasonable. It's not reasonable to walk up to somebody and just start commenting on sexually on her lady parts out in the open, offensively. That's not reasonable, but it is in some circles. Well, what am I trying to say? It's not reasonable to do that. Lively is suggesting that it was unreasonable for Baldoni to enlist the help of a health specialist that specializes in weight loss because it was fat shaming. And there was no evidence that he was trying to do anything other than be ultimately helpful. That's the difference. And that is the scales of justice, as they say. So let me get into this last time we left off in part three. You were at page 118. There's been a lot going on. So we started where we started where we ended up was they're now promoting the film. Baldoni has lost some of his writer credits with respect to the movie. There's been increasing tensions between the studio, Wayfarer, Sony execs, Baldoni, Lively. Oh, and by the way, Taylor Swift is pissed at Blake Lively. She says, "I ain't your dragon, bitch." She might as well have said, I don't know what she exactly said, but she might as well have said that. Oops.
"Does he look like a bitch?"
She might have said something like that. Yeah, Taylor Swift is not happy the way that she's been portrayed in these legal documents, which is to say that maybe Lively, in the course of representing who she is in Hollywood, overstepped or overreported or inflated herself for the purpose of bullying. That's an argument to make. Let's get into some of the stuff. So this August 8th entry states that Nathan and Lively's publicist, Leslie Sloan, reach an agreement whereby neither will communicate directly with a reporter to informing the other. Nathan states, "I'm not doing one thing without speaking to you," to which Sloan responds, "Me either." Just 9 minutes later, Sloan breaches her agreement with Nathan by engaging with a reporter at the Daily Mail. Sloan actively continues her discussions with the Daily Reporter, feeding false information to cast Baldoni in a negative light. To divert attention from Lively's tyrannical behavior on set, Sloan attempts to portray Baldoni as the antagonist, stating, "The whole cast doesn't like Justin. Nothing to, sick, do with Blake." By the way, when you see this, the person that is using this quote is just letting you know that they didn't write it like that. They're quoting it exactly how it was written. With Blake, she doubles down, insisting, "I'm telling you, she's a liar." They're panicking as the whole cast hates him. Sloan also threatens reporters, saying, "The entire cast I will have go on the record. This needs to hold." There's text messages between Nathan and Sloan. From Melissa Nathan. "Melissa Sloan, happy to. I land in less than 2 hours. Thank you. Have a safe flight. Also, I'm not doing one thing without speaking to you. I'm not answering one email about this situation. I've told everyone to not do one thing, plant, seed, even speak to one reporter, even on background. And now I'm involved. There will be no shock surprises to you. Me either." And then Sloan texts with the Daily Mail reporter. "I had to talk to you about some stuff that came in from reporters regarding Blake and her movie drama on plane." "Like what?" "Well, it's a lot to text, but it's regarding problems on the set involving her and Justin and fallout over what with Blake being labeled difficult and power struggle. That's 1,000% untrue. I don't want to go on record. Never on record. Your info is totally off. There is clearly something," pardon the crack in my voice, "there's clearly something going on because it's cold. It's cold from three reporters and none of them are me. There's clearly something going on because it's cold from three reporters and none of them are me. I'm just the only one not afraid to reach out to you. You have it all wrong. Your reporters are so wrong. Okay, I'm just being straight up with you because that is how I roll, because I'm coming to you because I actually like Blake. I don't want Daily Mail to F with her. One of them said that Blake and Ryan insisted on rewriting the movie, and another that she got very opinionated over directorial issues. You want to ring me when you land, and I'll tell them that they need to hold off on anything for very..." Oh, it cuts off and then starts. "Anything for a few because her rep is unavailable and need to at least get no comment. No one knows what we speak, just that you would read emails from me and respond. Yes, please, as thus info is all wrong. She didn't require script runs. Nothing to do with this. She produced the film and had a cut. There's a lot of typos. What WTF is going on? The whole cast doesn't like Justin. Nothing to do with Blake." Like I said, so here, as I'm analyzing this, this doesn't yet, to me, rise to the level of defamation or slander. But it's certainly planting seeds about somebody trying to put Justin in a negative light. There's a lot of gossip going around on the sets. They're talking about it. And by the way, gossip is protected speech. It's not defamatory. It's not, if you say, I heard this or I heard that, those are hearsay statements. That wouldn't be admissible in court. It's not admissible as a defamatory statement coming in the context of gossip. Where we start to find defamation is where these statements are presented as truth, outright bold-faced lies that are verifiably false, presented to people in positions of influence that can make or break Baldoni's career. Now you start getting into stuff that's defamatory. Breach of or interference with economic advantage, those causes of actions. It all ties into that. Moving on, like I said, the reporting is that there were issues between, is this just a repeat of this other thing? Between her and Justin as well as others, and that Justin found it difficult to work with her. The reporting is, that's not defamatory. They're repeating something that they heard from somewhere else. And so the implication is, from the listener, I heard, so go check with them. Not, I know that these things are true. One of these reporters known is close with Steph Jones because they used to always get Tom Brady to sell shit, and Steph reps him, I believe. I told she is awful, not relying on anything. She says, I'm telling you, she's a liar. They are panicking as the whole cast hates him. I promise she is lying. This will not look good for your site. The entire cast, I will have go on. The entire cast will have go on record. Can you give me anything at all on what is on what the issue is then if it's not her and it's him? No, I'm in a plane and this needs to hold. Sounds good. I'd like to clear this shit up. So she has things to say. We don't know where that's going to go yet. Later that day, Jones attempting to reinsert herself in a Baldoni and Wayfarer's good graces while sidelining Abel. Contacts a Daily Mail reporter about a story on Baldoni and Lively. Abel, at the direction of Baldoni and Wayfarer, previously instructed Jones not to speak to the press due to the fragile truce with Lively's team. Despite this, Jones brags to Wayfarer about trading calls with the Daily Mail to appear engaged with the account. Notably, at the time, Wayfarer and Abel were unaware that Sloan had breached her agreement with Nathan. Sloan and Sony later discovered that someone from Baldoni's team had been communicating negatively to the media. It was clear that Jones was the source, and Wayfarer's leadership, along with Sony, were livid. All parties were desperate to avoid an all-out conflict between Lively and Baldoni, just as the film was about to be released. So this is important because to the extent that they're claiming that Justin led a smear campaign against Lively, if there is indeed evidence that he was separating himself from any of this, he had nothing to do with it. It was people from his team going on the record in ways they weren't authorized to do, certainly not by him. Then that's a big deal because it puts a dent in that cause of action related to Lively's original lawsuit. Here is emails supporting that. Stephanie Jones, like, is been nice and fixed things for us in the past. I can give her a call that this is a nothing burger. More back and forth. Okay, so on August 8th, 2024, Nathan and Abel are left to deal with the fallout from Jones inserting herself. Melissa on Zoom. Jennifer, damn, I wanted to tell you something funny. I'm calling after. Steph chimed into the Daily Mail article and then screenshot it and sent it to Jamie and Tara and was like, I know her, I will handle, and she will kill it, and Jamie told her to stand down because you're handling. Made me giggle. Oh my god, wait, Jen, she just fucked us up. This is making sense now. She didn't respond though. She sent that to me and the team, not the writer. No, I think she did. You know what?
I think that's how I'm gonna do that. I'm gonna read these text messages in this voice. That way you could differentiate between the two parties speaking. All right.
So, that text message is blurry. Is this the same thing? I'm not even sure if I'm going to be able to read that. Negative on that front.
She's just ruined our strategy in one swift swoop. Blank was fucking holding. I'm so fucking pissed, Jen.
I just told Jamie.
Yep. I saw Leslie message, and now the studio is calling SJ. She's ruined our whole strategy. I'm fucking furious. I can't do this shit. Is this real? She's now pushed blank to write more. I'm trying to stop it. Oh my fucking God, I'm at a loss.
His voice is hilarious. When I read it like that, also not sure where they're putting this up. There is
no way we will do a tag story with DM. No one even knows we have him.
She said Stephanie. So maybe Stephanie is involved?
She's not.
V, weird. She said Stephanie is a cunt. That one repeats. Okay. I wanted to know, it's not me, and we have been honoring.
Yes, yes, absolutely. I just want to know that I am not crazy, and that you know what happened here in your heart in reality. You know it, correct?
100.
I am horrified. That's the last I will say. Okay, I just texted her. She's on the plane, coming back. I'm waiting for her to get back to me. Let's try and calm the situation all the way down. Once she responds, then we'll set a call for us three in a group chat. My sister said she is so furious, and I'm like, tear face. Does Jamie see it? Does he see it? She replied, more than happy to speak to you. I'm landing in 2 hours.
I don't know why I said it like that. Exactly. Everyone needs to cool down and stop fueling the fire.
I need to have a shower and go to my client, but you made the right decision, and I hope you know this. Exactly.
We're all on the same team.
I'm gonna tell her exactly that.
I know now more than ever.
Horrified.
Checking into the motel.
On with her, Leslie. All right.
I'm going to ask Leslie
if we can do a group text and update her on the request.
She needs to help kill that NYP store. She planted it. I'm still in shock.
Of course, that's the only thing that could blow up, and it's my sister.
And I guess screenshots of the articles. She needs to help kill that. Oh, same thing. Same thing. All right, so August 8th, crisis mitigation specialist Jed Wallace is engaged to assess and monitor all online and offline concerns related to Baldoni and Wayfair, specifically pertaining to information received about a developing campaign to discredit and damage Baldoni, including his Baha'i faith and Wayfair. Given the importance of the film to Baldoni and Wayfair, its success, and the critical support it would bring to the domestic violence survivor community, Wallace is asked to focus on analyzing online feedback and monitoring the overall sentiment related to Wayfair, Baldoni, Lively, and others working on the film. So early morning, August 9th, Abel received an inquiry from the Daily Mail. So apparently, Blank is speaking to Leslie to get Blake to cut the shit. I think we can get through this if we just get that New York piece killed, unless he agrees to a truce. Lol.
Jen, we can get through anything. Just trying to bail.
Shut the fuck up.
Good Lord. I'll be done in like 15 minutes. Can you speak
then? Yes. There's a screenshot of a very blurry, I'm not even going to try to attempt to read that. All right. So there's screenshots. I'll call him. Want me to do anything?
This stemmed from what happened yesterday. I'll tell you on the phone how I know Blank really well.
Wow.
And then I'll call you. Lol.
Okay. Jesus. And they persist more with these text messages and screenshots. How's that voice working out, by the way? I think it makes it a little bit. Oh, those are some flat articles. I need to save those for later. Where did I just lose my... let me close out of this. All right. So, all right, they're going back and forth. It appears to be there is leaked information. They're trying to decipher it all. Am I going to be able to read this? Because Leslie herself called the mall, Stephanie, who was dealing in the mall. Well, okay, this is the same thing. Yes, at 5, breakfast. Okay.
She put me on hold, so waiting for Jewel. Is that Jewel? Oh, waiting for her. Say some prayers for us, Justin.
Oof. FYI, Stephanie is likely calling Stephanie to clear her name about calling Daily Mail. Unbelievable. Tell her not to answer. This is crazy.
Send me that screenshot, can you?
What one?
Just the one saying she's calling DM. Just so I have more screenshots.
It is. Is it horrible to say that I don't think it's that bad?
No, because I know what we're watching for. So all the things considered, it looks like truth and gossip.
It looks like a plant from Blake's camp trying to steer the narrative.
Well, I mean...
I can tell you've done a lot of work. Here, nothing about being unsafe. That comment's sexual. Thank fucking God.
That's all I care about. The other stuff is just nonsense. And honestly, the money the Moore is making is fucking great for you guys. Let's just keep it steering that way. And you take this fucking client and never talk to her. I wish I had this voice, man. I would have so much fun with my brother. And never talk to her again, I swear to God.
Exactly. Do we need to still worry about NYP?
She also just needs time off herself, if I'm just being mindful of humanity. She also just, for a second, she needs to just stop, because obviously, there is something as a human being she is doing that is affecting herself mentally. Oh, with my sister now.
Anyway, there's more stuff like this, and it continues to go on. Very clearly, they're trying to portray the knowledge that there is somebody in Lively's camp trying to steer a narrative, and they're trying to deal with the fallout of that. That's what I'm seeing right here. Okay. Where did I leave? Okay, so August 9th, Heath calls Jones to clarify that due to the sensitivity of the situation, he feels more comfortable with Abel leading communications rather than Jones. Heath reiterates that Jones should refrain from taking any action on behalf of Baldoni or Wayfair until further notice. And at that time, Heath was in Chicago with Baldoni and Abel. They all agree that Abel, with firsthand knowledge and the most up-to-date information, was the best person to handle communications. Jones doesn't take this well, launches into a tirade, insists that she will speak to whomever she pleases.
I will speak to whoever I fucking please. Damn it, I lost my place.
All right. The day prior, Heath had texted Jones demanding that she not communicate with anyone on behalf of Wayfair or Baldoni. So Nathan, consistent with the pair's agreement, sends a text message to Sloan containing an email she had received from a Daily Mail reporter, unbeknownst to Nathan. This was the same reporter with whom Sloan had been communicating the day prior. Nathan confirms that she played no part in the story and tells Sloan, "I'm going to have to speak with him, but I'm just going to tell him nothing." She adds, "Happy to chat with you beforehand. If you'd prefer," Sloan deliberately omits the fact that she had spoken with the reporter just 24 hours prior, stating, "Let me know how it goes." All right. And these are the text messages confirming that. During a red carpet interview at the New York premiere, Lively stated, "The iconic rooftop scene, my husband
actually wrote it. Jesus.
Nobody knows that. I got to find a different voice for Lively.
What about this one?
That one.
What about it?
All right, this is officially the Lively voice. This
revelation regarding Reynolds purported. Folks, I apologize. It's Friday afternoon. I'm being a bit silly. It's been a long work week, man. My voice is barely starting to recover, and me talking like this is not helping. So pardon me taking some liberties with my Rodecaster Pro 2. This revelation regarding Reynolds' purported contribution to the script raised eyebrows at Sony, who told Wayfair that they certainly needed some clarity on public comments made about Ryan Reynolds potentially contributing writing services or the rooftop scene. Mm-hmm. I would imagine so. And there's an email confirming that. So, on August 9th, on the day of the domestic release of the film, Heath shares observations with Sony Marketing, urging them to take the topic of domestic violence more seriously as part of the film's rollout. This was a concern that Baldoni, Heath, and Wayfarer had long expressed to the team. I mean, from the very beginning. That was the whole purpose of the movie, and this is the language. As you know, this has always been a concern of ours, and I think we might agree that there's enough response to at least consider giving it a bit more thought. It won't hurt the movie by being more deliberate in embracing the DV aspect. People need to know that we, too, recognize the gravity and sensitivities of this subject. Oh, look at Lively. Is that light? Grab your friends. Wear your florals. What a nice picture. Okay. So more with Melissa and Jennifer. Tag and Abel continue to monitor online chatter about the film.
Staying steady. Are you following
that blank account, though? She freaks me out. That's why I was worried about LAT.
No request, though? I think people are bored. Majority of socials are so pro-Justin, and I don't even agree with half of them. Oh, I
agree. I'm just anxious, per usual. Lat reached out to Justin's old assistant.
You're okay. It's been too much. Press too chaotic. I told you. People Magazine messaged me when they messaged me again to say they're getting radio silence and everything.
That was the request he sent, though. Nothing to me. And then Blank from Showbiz 401 called me, but I'm leaving.
Lol.
Yeah, Blank reached out. Blank from ET, who just annoys me, and I saw that Blank said limited pickup, but I've honestly not seen any of those two pieces.
Just keep on giving nothing. Nothing, not one thing from those pieces. I mean, that was just a lot of work, just talking everyone off the fucking ledge for those two pieces.
Literally. I feel like I've been hit by a truck.
And then, after the weekend, people are going to move completely past. It's boring now. Nothing came out for anyone. I bet you have it, that constant anxiety. Go to the Wii Spa. They have really good food there, and you can lay down on the hot floor with some magical truffles.
Jamie wanted to have the crew reach out and give positive things to combat those stories, and I'm like, why? Why give this fuel?
No fuel. No nothing. We're so fucking lucky right now. He has no idea the shit that we know that we want to pull.
He's like, what's the harm? I'm having people say good things, and I'm like, no, because then they will search and search until they find someone to say something bad.
And that's what's good, because that's what's good about this, is that if anything comes out, she will know it's us, and we will know it's her.
It was a constant fight all day.
And we are all on the same page now, so everybody is watching everyone.
Exactly.
No fucking way. I swear to God, I will call him. I'm going to have a shower, but
I can't read this shit. Oh my God, yes, he will die.
He doesn't realize how lucky he is right now. He needs to press on him. Just how fucking lucky. The whispering in the ear. The sexual connotations like Jesus. Fucking Christ. Other numbers. Feeling uncomfortable, watching it. I mean, there is just so much. Doesn't matter if it's not true. It doesn't matter if it's not true.
I know. I don't think they get that. They think the truth wins.
No, it doesn't.
And I'm like, we are dealing with a psychopath who literally called you a sexual predator. Let's all be happy with difficult.
I have it on text message, by the way.
Unbelievable.
Let's be really happy with difficult. And he told him we took out misogynist?
Leslie can possibly believe that.
Let's give it a try. Let's give it a day to come, and let's call Jamie together tomorrow, and we can explain to him a few things together. And socials are really, really ramping up.
All right, so things are happening. The retaliation campaigns relied on more than just publicists and crisis managers spinning stories. They also retained subcontractors, including a Texas-based contractor turned Jed Wallace, who weaponized a digital army. Anyway, I'm not going to try to read this blurry text. It's going to take too long, and I don't think it's all that important. I think we get the gist. More of this, though. The attorneys highlight something. Saying study, are you following that? All right. I think people are bored. Oh, I agree. I think we read that already. Included in the CRD complaint. What is it?
He doesn't realize how lucky he is right now. Oh, yeah.
We did read that part. Also included is this blurry text message that I'm not going to be able to read. Baldoni felt it was important to stay on message, as he had during the film's junket press tour from August 4th to 9th. Despite a purported feud or the focus on the film's box office success, Baldoni sought to redirect attention to domestic violence survivors. He sends a text to the social media team urging them to focus their efforts on this topic. Justin, good morning, team. So I was thinking about the response to this weekend. I feel like what we should do is make sure to emphasize the voices of the survivors. It's going to be a lot of buzz how much money the movie made, but I want to be the one that always direct back to the survivors. So I would love to come up with some sort of video or carousel of messages from survivors and the response to the film. And his message and objective in making this film has been basically, that's been his North Star the entire time. From what I can tell anyway, with this narrative that, look, some of you are suspicious because it appears that Baldoni is just, he's a little bit too squeaky clean to be credible. There's no effing way that the guy is that squeaky clean. They got to have something on him. The suspicion that I'm seeing drummed up regarding Baldoni is just because he appears to look too good in these text messages and the direct evidence. To which my pushback would be, but if there was more to the story and there were more salacious text messages that seemed to suggest otherwise or put dents into that squeaky clean image, they would have no problem just releasing them. I just haven't seen that evidence yet. So to that argument, I'm just, maybe, I guess we'll see in the future. I just haven't seen it yet. On August 11th, Heath follows up on his email to Sony from August 9, 2024, expressing his gratitude for the team's efforts in making the film a box office success. He requests, however, that they schedule a call to discuss the film's messaging. Now, to be clear, we're not saying it's been inappropriately marketed in any way. In fact, you all have been brilliant. Thank you. Extremely honored to be partners with you. It's been fantastic. Proof is in the pudding. This post is only pointing to the ones who have spoke about the marketing. And while I'm not dissuaded by their commentary, it's good to take some learnings from it. And that's Jamie Heath, CEO of Wayfair. On August 12th, organic articles emerged directly related to how Lively was promoting the film. Natasha Jokic, here's what's going on with it. The ends with us. That's just a link to the article. This is the article. As rumors swirl about the cast and crew of It Ends With Us having a potential rift, it's worth noting how differently its stars Blake Lively and Jessica Baldoni have promoted the controversial film. Blake Lively fans blast It Ends With Us actress over the tone-deaf and shallow interview with co-stars. On August 12th, you know, I used to be able to get like audio notifications when these things... Miss Tree Lady, thank you so much for the $2. I used to have it set up where I would get like a little ringing in my ear whenever somebody would leave a super chat. How do I fix that? Where's Dominic when I need him? Fucking guy ain't never here no more. Automatically, no, that's not it. Virtual, no, no, no. Guest, no. Well, shit, I don't know. I used to have a way to do that. Now I guess I don't. And that's for Autostar. Well, I'll figure it. Oh, son of a bitch. Thanks, Bruce. Thanks, Bruce. I'm so sorry. I thought my screen was shared the whole time. Oh. Well, if that's all that goes wrong for today, then I think we'll be okay. I'm so sorry, folks. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. How do I fix my settings so that when there's like important messages like that, I get like a little buzz in my ear? Dominic used to take care of this stuff. No. Oh, maybe this. Let's see. No, that's not going to do it. All right. Well, we're just going to have to muddle through, aren't we? I appreciate you too, Sarah Don. Thanks, Bruce. You're out, like, as always, a G. I'm switching my TV so I can read those documents. Oh, yeah. Even with the... I'm looking this on a pretty large scale monitor, and it's not helping. Anyway, so August 12th, WME Able discuss yet another conversation between WME and Reynolds. WME shares that Reynolds and Lively are furious with Wayfair and Baldoni for positioning them. Reynolds and Lively are furious with Wayfair and Baldoni for positioning them as promoting the film as a Barbie film. When did he ever do that? That's the first I've ever heard of that allegation. While elevating Baldoni to speak on the more serious messaging. Well, I guess that would kind of support, if that was the narrative, and I'm seeing articles right here where fans are blasting tone-deaf, shallow interviews with co-stars, Blake Lively fans, and Baldoni's in the background. He's got this organization, and he's geared this film to raise awareness for domestic violence. It kind of tracks why people would have that thought. And so, anyway, they're Reynolds and Lively purportedly believe Nathan is responsible for this positioning, demand that Wayfair release a statement of contrition, taking accountability for the negative press towards Lively and Reynolds. So this is important because this is easily provable. If there's independent articles stating that Lively fans are upset with her because of how she has promoted the film somehow, while Baldoni is over there trying to do his domestic violence awareness thing, that is not his fault. And so if this was a portion of the public damage they're saying came from Baldoni, I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing where that evidence would have come from. I'd need to see it from Lively's complaint. Because from this, if I have an article like this, and I don't know how many more, this is from the Daily Mail, people knew that there was drama going on with the film. She is recorded doing, you know, dozens of interviews promoting the film. The one clip that I saw of her was her commenting. Look, she did like an hour speech or whatever. I don't know what she was saying during all of that. But if she had ever, during those interviews, attempted to raise evidence for domestic violence or promote the film as being this serious thing to address the issue of domestic violence, that's easily provable. Then you could just show that, look, this is what I was doing, yet this is how it's portrayed. And because they said this, now people are looking at me like this. That's defamation. That's bullshit. If, you know, they're assessing that based on how she's interacted with the press, that's not Baldoni's fault. That's because of how she handled the press, how she handled marketing and such. Continuing with this, they believe that Nathan is responsible for the positioning. Okay. They warned WME that absent compliance, the gloves will come off. You know, I'm getting sick and tired of this lady's threats. That's like the 12th time that she's threatened these people and her co-stars, her co-actors, with do this or else. In turn, Reynolds tells WME that he would personally draft a statement for Wayfair to release immediately. Now, look, the caveat with this is I'm looking at this paragraph. I do not see text messages or communications or images. So I'm taking this paragraph with a grain of salt. They're going to have to prove this to me. And they probably can. I mean, they're quoting something. They're quoting something. So this evidence is, I'm assuming, forthcoming. Heath and Abel are astounded that Reynolds and Lively blame Baldoni and Wayfair for their self-inflicted PR nightmare. Heath had consistently communicated that neither Wayfair, Nathan, nor anyone on their team was manipulating the internet using bots or seeding stories about Lively's or Reynolds' character. All press stories were organic and directly resulted from Lively's own tone-deaf marketing approach. Folks, I'm supposed to be doing FLAD right now. I'm going to have to push that back at least a half an hour. So part of me, while I edit that time frame, lest people be in there thinking that I'm about to go live any second. What's the quickest way to do this? Here, let's just do that. Oh, all right. That takes care of that. So, continuing with this timeline. So, August 12th, that evening, two WME execs, Heath and Abel, participate in a call to review the statement drafted by Lively and Reynolds on behalf of Baldoni, Heath, and Wayfair, and upon review, WME concurs with Wayfair that the statement was vague implies culpability without substance, fails to address the issues in hand. Furthermore, if the goal was to mitigate negative online attention directed at Lively, the statement would have the opposite effect. In response, Wayfair, Baldoni, and Heath reject the demand, firmly refusing to issue any statement falsely assuming responsibility for non-existent issues. This is an interesting little battle that they're going to have here. Because on the one hand, I think Lively's going to argue that, look, we went to the studios and say, look, there's this negative press coming out about me, and I don't know where it's from. I need you guys to step in and say something and shift the narrative because it's unfair. I don't know where it's coming from. I'd be really appreciative if you guys could just issue a statement that counters it. And they say, no, it's just going to make it worse. Fuck off. And they're in the right to do that, but... And I'm not even saying that it's a good argument. I'm just saying that their unwillingness to try to mitigate that wave of negative publicity might be some ammunition, not a lot, some ammunition for Lively to argue that everybody turned on her and wanted to cast her in a negative light. So, let's see. And this is the letter. All right, so August 12th. Abel shares with Nathan that Blake and Ryan want Justin to put out a statement. Both are shocked by the request and state that they have never encountered anything similar. Nathan advises Baldoni to retain legal counsel immediately. Blake and Ryan want Justin to put out a statement. This is unbelievable.
Call if he can. Career killer for them. And Wayfarer. No. Have to fight it. At what point do you fight? It's now. Lawyer up now. This is
so crazy.
Honestly, I've never had anything like it. Can he please hire a lawyer?
He needs to go. He has one, but he needs a litigator. Oh, he's got one now.
Get boyfriend. Does that mean boyfriend BF? Get BF. He's waiting and will. Is that BF or BL? Get BF. He's waiting and will also take on WN. Okay.
I'm assuming that that's a lawyer, the initials of a lawyer. The Daily Mail publishes an article titled, Blake Lively Goes Into Damage Control by Finally Addressing the Domestic Violence, and It Ends With Us, amid criticism over tone-deaf film promo. This follows Lively's post to moviegoers, which includes statistics on domestic violence and a link to resources for support. The information remained on her story for 24 hours. So this is an IG post from Blake Lively. And in it, she says,
thank you to everyone who came out to show that people want to see films about women and the multitudes we hold. It Ends With Us is a story of the female experience, all the highest highs and lowest lows. And we are so proud of it. We have been in celebration of this film and of getting a message so important out there in the masses. Thanks, Blank. All the embracing film with the same love, pain, and joy. And sharing it with you all. Love, Blake!
1 in 4 women aged 18 and older in the U.S. alone have been the victim of severe physical violence by an intimate partner in their lifetime. Intimate partner violence affects all genders, including more than 12 million people every year in the United States. Everyone deserves relationships free from domestic violence. The National Domestic Violence Hotline provides confidential support 24/7, 365. To access the hotline or to learn more, click the link below. For immediate help, text START to 88788. The following has been a message brought to you by the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. It hasn't. They have nothing to do with it. Tailspin stuff. So August 13th, the New York Post contacts Nathan for a comment regarding competing cuts and on-set feuds. The information provided is inaccurate. Lively did not have final edit approval, nor was she given Sony's cut. In reality, Sony did not have a studio cut. Rather, Wayfair and Sony shared a studio cut. Should the director's cut not perform well in audience screens, the studios collectively held the right to recut the film. However, this never occurred, as Lively used her promotional efforts to secure the final cut. All the information Leslie provided to the New York Times or New York Post was false and misleading. All right, so there's this text message back and forth. Let's see if I could try to zoom in on this a little bit. That's from Melissa. It was a more feminine edit. All right, we're going to do it.
And listening to this, Blake Lively was given that final approval on It Ends With Us to make the movie more feminine. According to sources, the star and the rest of the cast are not speaking to director and co-star Justin Baldoni, and Brandon Skillner particularly has a problem with many, with hints over. God damn it, I can't read this shit. Although not greenlit, as we predicted, there will now be a battle over the sequel that starts with us, as Baldoni owns the rights to the film. But due to the rift with Lively, it's unknown what will happen, a source said. There were two edits, and the studio went with a more feminine edit. Blake had the right to do that. She had final edit approval. Like hell she did.
NYP and Leslie Place, Jennifer Abel.
It was
not a more feminine edit. It was a different edit. Leslie is working overtime.
She really is, but I don't think she wanted to.
Have to remove more feminine edit. It was just a different edit. And she wasn't given final edit approval. She said she wouldn't promote the film if it wasn't one that she personally could get behind, i.e. if it wasn't her edit, even though Justin scored higher in the focus group screening. So that's the fact. However you want to spin it. Lol.
This is what I think we should do.
Can we say sources say Justin understood how important it was to have Blake support the film, so he and Wayfair gave the okay for her to have the say in the final edit, or is that too much?
I'm just on Zoom, but call Sarah and go through, or wait for me to do as well, and she has to give us the opportunity to comment.
All right, so that's more of that going on. On August 13th, Hollywood Reporter publishes a story naming Nathan as Baldoni's crisis PR rep, drawing a comparison between Baldoni and Nathan's previous client, Johnny Depp. This comparison proves damaging for Baldoni, as Nathan was hired specifically to ensure that the truth would be communicated free from interference by Lively's team. Crisis PR, veteran amid alleged It Ends With Us riff. All right, so here's what I'm gathering. I'm watching the public pick up on a rift because of the way that the film has been marketed. I don't see any evidence right now of a smear campaign advanced by Baldoni, Wayfair, or Sony execs against Blake Lively. I don't even really, well, I mean, arguably, you can say that, you know, Reynolds and Lively had been trying to tarnish the name of Baldoni to anybody that would listen for some time now. I mean, but in private, I haven't seen any evidence of them do it publicly yet. And that would be the standard of some of their causes of actions. That's really what I'm looking for. Oh, shit. All right. Are we going backwards? Yeah. August 8th. Sloan has a text conversation with Daily Mail reporter who spoke to Jones. Jones, acting independently, had reached out to Daily Mail, seemingly on her own initiative, and in direct disregard for Heath's previous request to say nothing. B-Man says, I can't find a reputable news source stating he quit. I want to blame him, but I don't see why he'd walk from the money. Look at Leif Morgan over there correcting somebody's use of your. Love it. All right. On August 14th, as discussed here and above, in early August 2024, Jones inserted herself into the situation, attempting to sideline Nathan and Abel. The issue, however, was that Jones had deliberately distanced herself from Wayfair's leadership, communications, strategy, and internal decision-making, citing her focus on higher-profile clients. Wayfair had no objection to Jones' disengagement, as Abel was their trusted advisor, and they had no interest in becoming entangled in Jones' work internal politics. Furthermore, Jones had been on a family vacation during the critical period of the press campaign and film premiere. Despite her physical distance, Jones' attempts to intervene were clumsy, unwelcome, and sporadic. As she tried to create drama and undermine Abel's authority, Wayfair and Baldoni remained focused on managing the crisis at hand, and on August 14th, 2024, in a final effort to position herself as the key player for Wayfair's account, anticipating Abel's imminent departure from Jones Works, Jones sent a disorganized strategy outline and includes a veiled threat to Wayfair, reminding Heath of their contractual agreement. I gotta see this. This is from Stephanie.
Hi, Jamie. I've been standing down. I have not contacted any press at all regarding any of these Justin issues since they arose on Thursday of last week while I was on family vacation in Europe. I want to take a moment to reiterate my commitment to Justin and our work together. Over the past 8 years, I've successfully managed every crisis for Justin without any negative press coming to light. As a key member of both Justin's and Wayfair's accounts since we signed him, I believe if one of our team members, including me, as a key man on Justin's account, can rectify a story, it's essential we leverage that for Justin and Wayfair. My background isn't solely in crisis management. I have extensive experience representing our billionaire clients. Billionaire. Many of the biggest stars and athletes in the world, as well as many of our Fortune 50 founder clients. This experience has equipped me with the skills necessary to navigate complex situations effectively. Often more diligently than the crisis PR firms that we worked for in the past. Which is to say that I have a particular set of skills. Skills I have acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you. If you let my daughter go now, that would be the end of it. I will not look for you. I will not pursue you. But if you don't, I will look for you. I will find you. And I will kill you. I'm sorry for taking
these liberties. I'm having fun on a Friday, man. You know what? It's Friday evening. What do you do? You got to have a little bit of fun sometimes.
My recommended strategy would be twofold. So this is her disorganized plan. Flood the zone with positives. We need to ensure that we promote positive narratives that media outlets cannot ignore. Currently, most stories are heavily biased towards Blake's perspective, leaving Justin unrepresented. It's crucial that we fight for every inch of every story, which requires far more effort than typical crisis PR want to put forth in our experience working with specialized crisis teams.
I'm not so sure if a flood of... I'm just not sure if that's going to do what she thinks it's going to do. If you don't deal with negative press and you just try to drown it out with more positive stuff, in a way, you know, you're not going to get anywhere with that until you at least face some of the criticism. You got to at least fight back a little bit. Ignoring it is ignoring it. Fighting back and confronting it is a completely different thing altogether.
Two, prepare alternate stories. We should mobilize a robust network of supporters and third-party advocates ready to counter these narratives on deep background as well as some on the record, making it clear that the claims being made are untrue and unfounded. As you know, I've been on vacation in Europe and turn.
Okay. August 14, 2024, a journalist from TMZ contacts Nathan Enable, requesting comment regarding three HR complaints filed against Justin Baldoni on set of It Ends With Us. That same day, Nathan receives inquiries from reporters about multiple HR complaints from set. This was not true. Hello, I'm a reporter at TMZ, and I'm reaching out to get a statement regarding some information. We're being told there were at least three HR complaints filed against Justin on set of It Ends With Us. We wanted to see if the complaints were investigated and what the results were. A source close to set says they don't know about an investigation, but there was an intervention. We heard there were multiple HR complaints from crew and cast starting from the first day of production. Wayfair is the studio. It's unclear if Wayfair Studios performed an investigation into the claims against themselves. Separately, we are aware there was an intervention with Justin Baldoni midway through production, based on a pattern of inappropriate behavior by him towards cast and crew. Well, somebody's feeding him that shit. Off record, tag team. The only complaint, which not confirmed if it was an official HR complaint, was a guy up for a gig on the crew complained. The younger guy who got it did so because of ageism. There was investigation, found no wrongdoing. There was no other complaints, especially no other. Oh, is that the end of it? Okay. There was not an intervention. Oh, there are no other complaints, especially no other documented HR complaints. There was not an intervention on set or with members of the crew. This would be false to allude to. Blake and Ryan had Justin and his team over for a meeting where Blake expressed all the things she was upset about. This was not Justin versus the team behind the film. It was his team versus Blake and Ryan. More of a contentious meeting. The way it need the way it needs, the way it reads now, reads as if it was proper intervention with cast and crew. Not true. Thank you. I just sent, I'll keep you posted. What is the email for Wayfair? I need legal to reach out. Okay. Somebody planted that shit. Somebody went and said that those contentious meetings were the direct result of Justin Baldoni's malfeasance. There's no evidence that's been presented so far that documents that, other than allegations that were repeated in Lively's complaints. That's a problem. On August 14th, Baldoni sends Abel a TikTok from a creator suggesting that Baldoni is involved in something bad. Baldoni is just as confused as the rest of his team about the nature of this bombshell. Abel replies, "That is the question of the century," and reassures him, saying, "There is no bombshell, as you know," while confirming that she and the team are closely monitoring the situation in case a response is needed. And, all right. Baldoni texts Nathan seeking clarity on what is happening, what the strategy is, how the ongoing feud can be resolved. Nathan explains that she spoke with Sloan and asked her for her perspective on a solution. Nathan observes that when Baldoni is respectful, they, Reynolds and Lively, they don't like it. And when he plays by their rules, they still don't approve. She questions, what do they want? Nathan further clarifies to Baldoni that she left the matter with Sloan, asking her to indicate what course of action she prefers. Nathan emphasizes that she is willing to work with Sloan, either collaboratively or to protect Baldoni and Wayfair. Until something is leaked or wrongfully put out by Lively's team, Nathan and her team is not going to take further action. And here's dozens of text messages going back and forth, I guess, to explain that paragraph. So Nathan receives word from a reporter that Sony chief Tony Vinciquerra made a statement about Lively being an advocate for domestic violence, with no mention of Baldoni in the piece. Nathan immediately senses Sloan's involvement in this development. However, Abel suggests that it is Reynolds who likely pressured Tony into the statement. Interesting. Interesting. Jennifer Abel, so Sony is speaking to press on Blake's behalf? I have no idea who this effing guy is. This is me being nice to the reporter, obviously, but yes. Jamie should know that Sony is speaking to media on Blake's behalf. It would enrage him that they are supporting her and not Justin. And same with Justin's agent. I just got off the phone with him, but I hadn't told him because it came through just after I put the phone down. On August 14th, excuse me. On August 14th, organic articles come out in response to Lively's promotion of the film. And these are the articles. And more organic articles come out in response to Lively's promotion of the film. On August 16th, more organic articles come out in response to Lively's promotion of the film. It ends with, "This promo has failed domestic violence survivors like me." August 16th, Nathan receives a message from a reporter about a story from the Daily Mail. Could Blake Lively be canceled? Nathan, realizing that the article could give the impression of having been planted by her, laments, "Man, this is unfair because it's not. It's also not me." The reporter responds, "No, it totally does look like his side." Nathan shares a screenshot of her conversation with the reporter with Abel. The two of them sarcastically joke, "You really outdid yourself with this one." Nathan responds, "That's why you hired me, right?" The mail is going nuts. "Damn, that's fair because it's not me." "Everything now looks like it's me. Maybe not to you." "No, it totally does look like his side." Omitted from Lively's complaint is this. "Wow, you really outdid yourself. That's why you hired me, right? I'm the best." What the fuck is going on? Oh, boy. On August 18th, Baldoni again asks Nathan to confirm, "This is not us, correct?" Baldoni was seeing the feud rumors. Could not believe how much heat Lively was getting. Nathan reassures him that none of us would ever do this. Nathan continues, "There is the struggle where it's kind of maybe even unbelievable the way that people are turning against her. It was organic. She's blown herself up by her own actions." So what they're going with is, look, if there's negative press, it was organically made. It wasn't us. It wasn't our team. It certainly wasn't Justin Baldoni. It was a result of what had gotten out there in the public, basically the result of the merits of her marketing campaign for the film. Show me one text message where Baldoni's signing off on any of this. Show me one email where he's communicating to people about a campaign against Lively. Or evidence that these articles that came out organically were the part of some kind of a coordinated plan. I mean, I have the makings of some people talking about how to deal with negative PR, but to suggest a smear campaign, I don't see it yet. I don't see it yet. Is it coming? I don't know. On August 19th, Angela Yang, Blake Lively's, it ends with this promotion called Disrespectful by Some Survivors of Abuse. Jones work chief of staff promised to release Abel's phone number to her. On August 20th, more organic negative press. August 21st, on August 21st, 2 days before her last day, Abel pulls up the Jones work office in Beverly Hills. There, she is confronted by a physically imposing security guard, a lawyer sitting in the conference table, covered in documents, an IT professional, and Jones chief of staff. Apart from Jones' chief of staff, Abel had never seen any of them before. After being ushered into the conference room, Abel sees that the security guard is posted just outside his doors, blocking the exit. In a menacing and cold tone, the attorney points to the documents and tells Abel to review and sign them. The attorney claims that Jones Works believes she had proprietary information on her personal laptop and will likely have grounds to sue if Abel does not give them access. Completely caught off guard by this hostile and intimidating display, Abel falls into a state of shock. She's never experienced anything like this and does not know what to do, fearful that she will burst into tears and humiliate herself, which she knew was what Jones wanted. Abel disassociates. Knowing she has not done anything wrong, just desperate to get out of there, Abel signs the documents without digesting their contents. That is the definition of coercion. Afterwards, the lawyer demands that Abel hand over her personal laptop. Abel complies, and the IT professional conducts a search that turns up nothing. The attorney then presents Abel with a list of approximately 10 documents and accuses her of having accessed and stolen them. Presents Abel the list of approximately 10 documents. Abel denies having done so. The IT specialist conducts a further search of the laptop, which again turns up nothing. The attorney then instructs Abel to hand over the phone, after which security would escort her out of the building. Still utterly shell-shocked and desperate to get out of there, Abel agrees to hand over the phone, so long as they will confirm that Jones Works will immediately release her personal cell phone number, allowing Jones Works to take possession of the physical device without gaining unrestrained access to its contents. It will also enable Abel to get a new phone and move on with her life without undue disruption. Abel pleads with Jones to release her number in a text the following day. Steph, this is Jen. Jen and Abel, my new cell, I'm writing you both as a personal plea. Please release my cell phone number. This is the same number I've had since high school. This isn't a work-related thing. This is my personal number that is linked to all my bills, my medical, Chris's dad, living facility, all of my personal emails and accounts, and due to two-factor authentication, I can't access anything. You wrote me numerous times you were going to release this, and when Verizon was calling you during the 4 hours I was there yesterday, you never picked up. They said you never even started the process after you told me you did. The lawyer I was ambushed with yesterday even said this was fine to do. Get the fuck out of here. They straight up bullied her. For all of you folks listening or watching this, that may or may not be sophisticated in the ways of how lawyers collect evidence. If anybody demands that you release anything, they corner you in the back office and say, give me your cell phone or give me your laptop or give me this or that or whatever. Kindly tell them to fuck off and say, look, you want things, call my attorney. Are you the police? Are you law enforcement? Do you have a search warrant? Do you have a warrant? I'm under arrest. What are you doing? Even give him my phone. Get the fuck out of here. Steal me and discover it, bitch. Talk to my attorney. Here's his number. Call him. You got something to say? They ambushed her. They straight up ambushed her. I mean, there was no defense for that. She was intimidated. I don't blame her for giving up those things. But if you're listening and somebody ever tries to pull that shit on you, kindly tell them what they can do with those orders. They can kindly wipe their ass with it and fuck right off. Even if you don't have an attorney, just say, look, you can call my lawyer. Who's our attorney? Oh, I don't, well, you know what? Why don't you send me a email request and I'll get back to you in the morning. How about that? Anything that they use to retort and whatever they're trying to say to intimidate you, it's nonsense. It's nonsense. They're not law enforcement. They're not anything. You don't have to give them anything. All right. That was upsetting. August 21st, on the same day that Abel's phone was seized by her employer, Stephanie Jones, Nathan receives a call from Leslie Sloan telling her that she has seen her text and that she will be sued. Nathan receives a call from Leslie Sloan telling her that she has seen her text. Okay. I guess this is Leslie Sloan's incoming. Baldoni sends Nathan a suspicious profile, suspecting it of trolling Lively. Nathan confirms that 100% this is not anyone from your team whatsoever. I'm not going to be able to read that. This is an example of someone trolling blank on all my posts, but doesn't seem like a real account. But yes, 100% this is not anyone from your team whatsoever. August 24th, Nathan's tag team continues to see organic backlash towards Lively without the involvement of Tag, the article in question. Blake Lively, fearing for her career amid It Ends With Us backlash. Well, on August 27th, Nathan further reassures Baldoni that everyone I speak to, and so many just chats that don't even know I'm on this all, are pro you. I know that's not your intention either, to make her or anyone an outcast, but the sentiment is pro you. Thank you for sharing. All right. I got 13 pages to go. Folks, do you mind if I postpone flat by like 15 minutes so I could finish this? I do not want to do part 5. I'm just going to bite the bullet. I'm postponing flat by 15 minutes, and we're going to, I'm going to make sure that I finish this. This is part 4. There will not be a 5th. All right. Let me just edit this real quick. Yeah. All right. All right. So on September 1, Nathan reveals to Baldoni that she finally watched the film in theater. She shares a touching message with Baldoni. He also shares a personal story that inspired him to direct the movie and ultimately option the book. Ironically, it was this story that Lively chose to use against him later in her list of 17 points when she required that there be no discussions with Miss Lively of personal experiences with sex. In her complaint, she intentionally misrepresents the story to suggest that Baldoni had engaged in sexual contact without her consent. In fact, it was the other way around. Baldoni was referencing an intimate relationship in which he was the one who did not give consent, not the other way around. Should I even try to read these text messages? There's no effing way. There's no way. What do I got here? I'm not going to try to read this. On September 8th, Baldoni sends a text to his original editors, hopeful that one day they will complete the film as intended. Lively files her complaint. On December 20th, Megan Twohy, a reporter from the New York Times, reaches out to Wayfair about allegations made by Lively related to a filed CRD complaint. Please offer any on-the-record comment as well as any information you think we should know. Additionally, please notify us of inaccuracies. This is the email that did that. And on December 20th, Wayfair's reps responds to the journalist and unequivocally denied Lively's accusations. It is shameful that Ms. Lively and her reps would make such serious and categorically false accusations against Baldoni. Wayfair Studios and his reps, as yet another desperate attempt to fix her negative reputation, which was garnered from her own remarks and actions during the campaign for the film, interviews, and press activities that were observed publicly in real time and unedited, which allowed for the internet to generate their own views and opinions. These claims are categorically false, outrageous, and intentionally salacious, with an intent to publicly hurt and rehash a narrative in the media Wayfair Studios made the decision to proactively hire a crisis manager prior to the marketing campaign of the film to work alongside their own representative with Jones, employed by Stephanie Jones due to the multiple demands and threats made by Lively during production, which included her threatening to not show up to set, threatening to not promote the film, ultimately leading to its demise during release if her demands were not met. It was also discovered that Miss Lively enlisted her own representative, Leslie Sloan with Vision PR, who also represents Mr. Reynolds, to plant negative and completely fabricated and false stories with media even prior to any marketing and commenced for the film, which was another reason why Wayfair Studios made the decision to hire a crisis professional to commence internal scenario planning in the case they needed to address. The representatives of Wayfair Studios still did nothing proactive nor retaliated and only responded to incoming media inquiries to ensure balanced and factual reporting and monitored social activity, which is pointedly missing from the cherry-picked correspondence as the evidence that there were no proactive measures taken with media or otherwise, just internal scenario planning and private correspondence to strategize, which is standard operating procedure with public relations professionals. I mean, that's what I saw. On December 21, almost 2 hours before the deadline given by Toohey for plaintiff's response, the Times published the article entitled, "We Can Bury Anyone Inside a Hollywood Smear Machine." On December 31st, Baldoni and team filed a lawsuit against the New York Times. Lively files a lawsuit against Baldoni and team. On January 7th, Lively attempts to serve Baldoni and team during the LA wildfires, going as far as to serve a member of Baldoni's team while he attempted to evacuate with their small child. Yo. That process server would have been in danger. Imagine getting served with a lawsuit as you're evacuating your house with your small child. Tasteless. On January 16th, Baldoni and team filed a suit against Lively, Reynolds, Sloan, and Vision PR. On January 24, discovery is made that the main imagery used in the articles has metadata creation timestamps prior to publication. The main Baldoni image that headlines the article was finalized. What is this date? On December 16, 2024. Okay. Additional smear Baldoni imagery exists within the article on December 18, 2024. January 26, it is determined that the promotional video for the Lively smear campaign article was finalized on December 12th. The video preloads static imagery for promotion inside the article itself was created on December 17th. There it is. The schema for the video page also confirms December 12th finalization and upload dates. The Wayfair parties found 41 instances of an October 31, 2024 timestamp related to text message storage and styling into BirdKit, which are believed to be the content management system for the Times. On information and belief, meaning we don't have any evidence, but we think this is true. October 31, 2024 does not correspond to the message embed generator versioning itself, but rather when they may have embedded into the CMS for future use in an article. Previous articles show a similar pattern, and here's links to this. The discovery is going to be interesting. I cannot wait for these depositions. It is confirmed that the PDF version of the CRD filed by Lively was indexed on New York Times domain on December 10th. This does not necessarily represent the first time that the file was indexed by Google, just that it was indexed on this date. In order to accurately determine the first indexation, data would be required from the New York Times Google Search Console account, and they're going to get that. On January 29, after performing a deeper analysis, the following was found. The JSON schema exposes the smear promo imagery was set for consumption at the end webpage level on December 18th, 2024. In the highlighted images, there is a reference to smear promo Google, which means that object's imagery was intended to be consumed, most likely as either Google News direct feed or as a Google AdWords ad unit. There are also multiple versions of these images. The V2 and V3 suggested they went through multiple iterations before arriving at what could be used on December 18th. Okay. Oh, shit. What did I do?
Oh, shit.
All right. So that's it. That's the end. If I'm being completely honest, with respect to the metadata, it appears to me that Baldoni's attorneys have some threads leading to hard evidence of a carefully crafted smear campaign against Baldoni that they attempt to expose in further litigation via discovery, via deposition, or otherwise. With respect to the causes of action, I'll go through them just very quickly. Let me just pull up some of my older notes from the pleadings. I'll go through some of this just so I can anchor myself here. So essentially, these are the allegations against Baldoni. Obviously, the inappropriate and unwelcome behavior on set. I have not seen any evidence whatsoever in this 168-page document in Lively's original complaint or in any of the moving papers on either side from any party that proves or even goes so far as to suggest that Baldoni did anything improper or inappropriate on set. I have no proof of that. I have Lively's allegations and nothing more. But in terms of cold, hard proof, I have quite the opposite. The closest I've seen to anything resembling sexual harassment or inappropriateness was that one text message that Lively had sent. That Lively had sent to Justin with the no teeth remark, and she flirts, she's flirty and all this kind of stuff. It appeared to be that she was trying to flirt with Justin, and Justin immediately starts talking about his wife and kids. That was it. I had also earmarked that at that moment, if Lively was going to have any ill will towards Lively or towards Baldoni, it would have started maybe then. Maybe she views that as a big rejection. I don't know. But the allegations that he was engaging in inappropriate and unwelcome behavior towards Blake and others on the set, nobody else other than Blake is accusing him of that. Who are these others? Who are the others? She's talking about comments on the actress's appearances. I've seen nothing like that. It was reported that another actress stated that she could not talk to him outside of a scene. Allegations that he made comments about Lively's weight. There were comments made about her weight, but it was comments basically stating, yeah, don't worry about your weight, whatever. He never once said a derogatory thing that I've seen in writing that's been recorded anywhere that seems to chide Blake Lively regarding her weight. Just nothing. Sexual harassment. He's accused of his behavior was not in line with respectful workplace expectations. I've seen nudity writers. I've seen intimacy coordinators. I have seen contracts that Lively was supposed to sign. She got rid of the coordinators. She refused to sign different things. Justin was at all times appearing to me, trying to get her to sign or abide by these terms that she wanted. At some point, they had rehearsed things. Without anybody being there, it appears, without the intimacy coordinator, at least. The video, there was one video that came out purporting to be of an incident where Justin took liberties in a kissing scene. The public opinion, the overwhelming public opinion seems to be that video doesn't show anything like that. Why is that a big deal? Because the general public is going to make up the jurors on this case. Creating a hostile work environment, along with Heath, accused of contributing to a hostile work environment. I haven't seen that. The only hostility that I've seen so far has come from Lively's endless demands in this case. Demanding that certain things be met or else I won't do this. I won't do that. I'm not showing up to that. We will not resume. I'm not going to be part of this. I need to edit by myself. I'm not going to market the film. I'm not going to show up on the set. All of these things. All of these things. And there's plenty of writings suggesting that, demanding that Justin Baldoni not get credit for, get his writing credits on the film. The smear campaign, he's accused of retaliating, gets lively after raising concerns about his behavior. It's allegedly launched a social manipulation campaign to damage Lively's reputation, including using social media to bolster his own image and suppress negative content about him. I haven't seen that evidence. Is it forthcoming? I don't know. Maybe they're going to release their own 168-page timeline full of the receipts that show Justin doing those things. I just haven't seen them in any of the filings yet whatsoever. Claiming that he's misrepresenting himself as a feminist ally, I have no evidence to suggest that he's misrepresenting anything. Exploitation for personal gain, attempting to control the film, hiring a crisis PR team, misleading public statements, repudiation of contractual obligations with Jonesworks. I don't see any merit to those causes of action. So I'm honestly, and to be fair, it's pretty one-sided because I'm only reading Baldoni's publication right now regarding their version of the evidence. All I'm saying is, from what I'm seeing, from what she's accused Justin of, I see no evidence of harassment or inappropriateness. I could pretty much toss those causes of actions out with the bathwater right now. I haven't seen misleading public statements. What? She's got to be specific. What specifically is she talking about? He did hire a crisis PR team, but that appears to be because they were getting calls from reporters stating that there was rumors that there were HR complaints as a result of Baldoni's behavior. Is any of that true? And then they're starting to see all these negative things start to pile up. And so internally they have these discussions, but it was for defense. It wasn't for offense. I don't see any evidence of a repudiation of contractual obligations. Rebuffed efforts to settle privately. Yeah, nothing like that. Give me a second. With respect to Baldoni's complaint against her, orchestrating a smear campaign, maybe. I mean, look, somebody leaked something. Somebody leaked something. Making false accusations, that was riddled throughout. And to be fair, I don't see any direct comments directly from Reynolds or from Lively trying to do that. I see a lot of other people insinuating that it was going on behind the scenes. So we need more evidence to prove those allegations. Civil extortion, maybe. Maybe, with the caveat that, yeah, she was making those demands, but you kept giving into them. Is that extortion or is that you agreeing to her terms because you knew it was going to benefit you? We need that to be fleshed out a little bit more. Defamation, false light. We're on the fringes of it. I don't see anything mind-blowingly obvious that suggests that this has occurred. I need more evidence. I don't have it yet. Seizing control of film. Alienating cast and crew, maybe. Tone deaf promotion, yeah. In short, although that 168-page document is impressive, it does not answer with any finality the question of whether or not Lively, or Baldoni for that matter, are guilty of any of these causes of actions that have been lodged in the many different legal complaints. Is that forthcoming? I guess we're going to have to see. What I know is this is going to be really entertaining in the coming weeks and months. And I mean, I've gone this far in coverage. I'm going to be picking this up as more stuff comes out. All I'm suggesting to you is, look, you could be on whoever side you want to be on. I am not going to knock you for that. You could think that Lively is a monster. You could think that Baldoni is a liar. You could think whatever you want. All I'm saying is I do not have definitive evidence right now to throw this case out and declare a winner. This is a tribal case. There's lots of tribal issues. There is not a smoking gun yet in this case. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of insinuation, but we need to ferret that out, and that's what discovery is for. So that's what I'll say. Listen, folks, I'm going to go do some flad. Hey, Bruce, we're ready now. Sorry for being so late. We'll get started in about 3 minutes. Maybe the schnitzel will join if she's not. I got to drink some tea. I'm going to try to recover my voice. I thought I was doing good, and now I'm starting to crack a little bit again. Where do I lean? I think that Lively is a manipulative, conniving Hollywood person. I think she's a liar. I think she's ego-driven. I think that Justin has been steamrolled as a result of his own kindness. I think he came into this with the best of intentions. I think that Lively has used her connections and perhaps even overstated some of her connections to gain influence over the film. I'm flabbergasted by the way that the execs from Sony and Wayfarer and Baldoni gave in to her many demands. I'm angry that, and I feel like a lot of this would have been cleaned up, was simply them enforcing the original contract rules. They'd have a much stronger case if they simply sought to enforce their own rules. But because they didn't, now we have this, we have this mess where it's unclear what the terms even were. She didn't even sign the freaking contract, but you all kept on going. And so there is a contract. There are terms. What are the terms? We don't know, because they failed to enforce the contract as it was written. I want to say that I lean on the side that Baldoni probably has more merit to his claims than Lively, for the simple fact that if it's true that Lively and Reynolds were going around and out of their way to speak to people of influence in Hollywood to suggest that he was a sexual predator and was this and that, behavioral issues and whatnot, and speaking to influential people, that is a lot closer to defamation than Lively has gotten so far. I have plenty of evidence I've seen in this document that there were organic articles written by people that were not in the know, that simply observed behavior by Lively in her interviews and Baldoni in his interviews, and formed some opinions. Is that a smear campaign, or is that people reading the tea leaves of the case? And so it doesn't matter where I'm at right now. Right now, I think there's more merit to Baldoni's side than Lively's, but I've also just read like three different pleadings and documents and exhibits only from his attorneys that they put out there. All I've read was Lively's initial complaint. They're going to have a response to all of this, and I'm going to reserve my opinions until I see all of that. But yeah, right now I'm leaning to Baldoni having merit to his claims, and that maybe Lively is in the wrong for all of this. So I'm not making any emotional statements. I'm not going to go out of my way to, say that I definitively know anything. I'm just saying, from the evidence is really kind of weak related to causes of actions that exist. So we'll see. But PR-wise, Justin's attorneys did an amazing job of shifting public attention away from his client and casting all of the negative gaze onto Blake Lively. If you want to call that a smear campaign, I mean, that's a lot closer to a smear campaign than anything else, but it's a direct result of her allegations against Justin. And all they're doing is putting out what they believe is the truth. And so that's where we stand. Folks, I don't know how much time I spent on this case, but we're done going over that stuff. I will continue to cover Baldoni case as more stuff comes out. But for right now, that's what I have. Folks, I'm going to do some family law after dark. Find your way over there if you haven't already. I will drop a link. You know what? For those of you that are still here right now, I'm going to drop a link to Vlad before I go. And then hopefully I'll be joined by a couple of people that I had pre-planned to join the show. And then we're going to do some family law after dark, and we're going to have some fun after I get some tea so I could revive my voice. somehow. Let me just grab this link. All right. Perfect. Normally Dominic does this sort of thing, but he's not here right now. All right. Link is in the description, or I just posted in the comments. Join me over there. We'll get started in about 3 to 5 minutes or so. I love you all. Bye-bye.